Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, we hope you stay glued to our website, kptz.org. Our website is much more than a place where you can listen to today's shows. For example, you can find the biographies of all of our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around town, and you can even sample some of our earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some of the earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who owns that house on Taylor Street? You know, the one that has what looks like a model of a church moving slowly around the front lawn. If you watch closely, you'll soon realize that the little church is actually a chicken coop. It moves all around the lawn, chickens clucking inside. Who owns that coop? And who built it, anyhow? Speaking of interesting local citizens, who are our local transportation wizards? There's the kid on the motorized skateboard. There's the recumbent bicycle built for two. And then there's the guy with the pedal-driven kayak. He has a red flag mounted on the pole behind him, the better to see him in the water. He also has a clutch of fishing poles sticking up behind him. Having the right fishing pole is quite important, you know. Jefferson County is full of all sorts of fascinating characters. This show, Our Town, tries to profile some of the singular personalities who live here, but the show's only a half hour long, which is definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. So it's a synopsis. We try to talk about their lives, their dreams, how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is Jim Wachowski, who's the East Jefferson Fire and Rescue Chief. Jim took over the position last December after working in various fire departments around the state. So welcome to the show, Jim.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity.
I always like to start out by asking my guests something about their background. Are you a local boy born and bred on the Olympic Peninsula?
Pretty close to the Olympic Peninsula. I grew up on Bainbridge Island and graduated from Bainbridge Island High School. Spent all of my childhood years on Bainbridge Island.
I see. So you went to high school on Bainbridge. The high school kids notoriously lump each other into some category, another jock, nerd, band geek, whatever. What do you think your peers thought of you? Not what you thought of you. What do you think they thought?
Well, I think my peers thought of me as being middle of the road. I played a little bit of sports in high school, some football and some baseball, and then definitely wasn't a nerd. My technology skills today back that up. But I was middle of the road. I was just an average kid growing up and through high school.
I see. And did you have any brothers and sisters?
I do. I have two younger brothers. I have a brother that's 2 years younger than me that lives in Squim. And then I have another brother that's 8 years younger than myself. And then he lives on Bainbridge Island still.
Okay. Now, there are some kids who get focused early on in life and they know I want to be X when I grow up. And then most kids don't. They flounder around a bit. Where did you fall in that spectrum?
Well, up until I was 15, I think I was one of those kids who was trying to figure out what they wanted to do in life, just as many do. There was an opportunity that came up at the Bainbridge Island Fire Department where they were going to start up an Explorer Scout, which is a kind of an offshoot of the Boy Scouts of America. You get to go out and try a career field. They started their first Explorer Scout troop at the fire department. The fire department came to the school, basically recruited individuals that thought that this is something they may want to explore in regards to a career field.
What sort of screening did they put you through? I mean, did you have to take any sort of tests, physical or otherwise?
Due to our age and the rules under the auspices of the Boy Scouts, there really wasn't anything other than an application and an interview to see what our level of interest and motivation was and what we were willing to commit and dedicate to the program.
Mm-hmm. And what was the commitment?
The commitment was that you would go to drill nights, Tuesday nights from 7 to 9 o'clock, and then every once in a while there would be a drill on the weekends. Then you could go and ride with the crews that were on duty out of the fire stations.
Now that sounds like the fun part.
That was definitely the fun part.
What did you do during the drill part?
Experience all the different things that the fire department does. So if it was medical training to fire training to how we can support operations on the fire ground and on the incident scene, it was really just a 30,000 foot level training for us as very young people to see if that's even remotely close to what we want to do as a profession.
I'm sure you volunteered to go out with the equipment. What was maybe one of the most exciting early experiences you had?
I distinctly remember the very first call that I went on. We were allowed to go and observe on calls, and I remember the address, the location, and the call type that I went on, and it was very interesting. It was in the evening on a drill night, and there were three or four of us that were in the back of the ambulance. When we arrived on scene, turned around, the person that was driving the ambulance, all he could see were these big eyeballs and the darkness of the back of the unit, just because we were all very excited. And for all of us in that unit, that was our very first call ever.
Huh. And what was the type of the call?
It was a medical call, and it was someone having chest pains.
Huh.
That was my very first call 32, 33 years ago.
Wow. And I take it from the way you're talking about it, nothing tragic actually happened.
No, which was great. It wasn't something that was tragic at all.
Well, okay, you had this group of scouts, what, 10 of them roughly?
Yeah, originally it was 12.
Okay. Correct. And how many of them went on to actually join the fire force?
Out of that group there are seven of us that continued on into the
wow,
fire service.
That's and amazing.
It is amazing. And as a matter of fact, one of those individuals is now in charge of the University of Washington Harborview Emergency Room Program, Seattle Medic 1, in Airlift Northwest. So he grew up on Bainbridge Island with us, and now he's the doctor in charge of all that. And then the rest of us became firefighters, paramedics, officers, etc. So a pretty good success rate from that very small group that
wow,
started off.
That is amazing. Do you know whether they continued the program over the years?
They did continue it over the years. I don't think they do that anymore.
Well, that's too bad.
It is too bad.
Obviously, you were still going to high school, and how did you transition into a more permanent position?
In my senior year, myself and another individual that was in that group had enough credits to graduate from high school early, and we were able to participate in a job share program at the fire station. So our last trimester of high school, myself and this other individual worked at the fire station. We still had to turn in paperwork and projects and things such as that. But we were able to spend that last trimester of high school at the fire station learning if this is truly a profession that we want to enter into in the future. So from there, I graduated from high school, and then I became a resident firefighter, which meant I lived at the fire station. So my primary residence was at the fire station.
Do they still do that?
They still do that. As a matter of fact, we even do that here in Jefferson County with residents.
Well, that's interesting. And so their sleeping quarters actually in the station?
Yep. So their bedrooms and, so to speak, where they live is at the fire station. And what they do in recognition of that, so their payback to that is they provide staffing to go on calls.
Right, because so, they're already there.
Because they're already there, and they pull shifts with the other duty crews. They're a volunteer. They receive a stipend for the calls that they go on, but they are, in all essence, a volunteer, and they're there to learn. And most of the people that participate in those resident programs do want to make this a profession in the future.
On TV, when you see guys at the fire station, they slide down a pole to jump in the trucks, but they also have big communal meals. Is any of that real?
Due to the number of injuries that were sustained from going down those poles, they're pretty much not allowed in the fire stations anymore. Let's put
okay.
it that way.
Okay.
Unfortunately, TV doesn't portray actually what we do. It's glamorized, just like anything else, I guess, in Hollywood. But we do have communal meals. The shifts that are on duty, they do usually make dinner together. That's a tradition. But most of the other activities that you see on TV in those shows aren't really what we do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. And for the cooking part of it, is there one person assigned to do it, or is it rotated around? How does that happen?
Yeah, usually with your dinner meal, it's rotated around. There's some people that it's good that they don't participate in that rotation.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But there are the cooks, and there's a few good ones that are in there. And usually it's just a dinner. It's not a breakfast, lunch, that you're on your own. But dinner is something that you try to do together.
Okay. So when you were first a resident fireman as a young man, which station were you at then?
So I was at the fire station at the time, 21, which is right in the middle of Bainbridge Island, right along Highway 305.
Okay.
So I was at that station there, and we rotated around to the other fire stations.
Okay. And how long were you on that particular detail?
So I was a resident firefighter from being the age of 18, and when I was almost to my 21st birthday was when I was hired as a career firefighter over for the city of SeaTac, which is over in King County by the SeaTac Airport.
Okay. You use the term career firefighter. What does that mean?
After I realized that the fire service was something I wanted to pursue as a career field, as my employment, as my profession, we test. You test for different positions. And fire departments test for your name to get on the list to be considered for employment in the future. So that is your career then. You transition, if you would like, from a volunteer status to a career status working for an employer, and that is your occupation. So when you make that transition, that's what that means.
Did you come from a family that had firefighters in it?
There are no other firefighters in my family. My father was a reserve sheriff for Kitsap County for many years, but no other fire service members of my family.
Okay, and how'd your parents feel about when you made your decision?
Well, I know my dad was fairly supportive. My mom was a little bit, she was definitely had some trepidation about her young 15 and a half year old son going and doing this. But after a while, they saw how excited I was to go to the fire station, mm-hmm. to be able to participate, serve the community, and kind of, I think I had to prove it to her that I was going to be all right. So, you know, they're very supportive. Obviously, now they know it's been a wonderful career for me and my family, and they've been nothing but wonderful in regards to their support.
Well, I'm sure, you know, I mean, it obviously can be a dangerous profession.
Yes.
So mothers tend to worry about things like that.
Absolutely. It was very justified. It was just trying to convince her that it was going to be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were at SeaTac for a while. And then what was your next step?
You bet. I was at the city of SeaTac for 5 years as a career firefighter. Excellent experience, very busy organization, very, very urban, suburban area. And then in 1996, I had the opportunity to lateral over to South Kitsap Fire and Rescue. That's down in the Port Orchard area. With that position, there was actually three of us that left the city of SeaTac to lateral over as lieutenants, as company officers. So you're going to be in charge of your own fire station as a company officer.
Mm-hmm. During those years, when you were, you know, actively in the field, do you remember any dangerous calls that you
incidents?
Were on? Yeah, incidents.
Sure. After doing this for 32 years, you have a lot of different memories of calls and
right.
things that really tested your experience and your training. And then in SeaTac, there were a lot of multifamily dwellings, so apartment buildings. And over there, we had a lot of apartment fires, just because the number of them. And one of the most significant calls I've ever been on in my career was we had an apartment building with multiple apartments on fire, and people needed to be rescued that were up on higher floors. So on the second and third floor, because the first floor in the hallway was on fire. And so we got there, it was 2:30 in the morning, and we had three or four apartments where people were hanging out the windows that needed to be rescued.
Wow, so you put the ladders up and
we put the ladders up. We were getting in there and working on extinguishing the fire, and we made multiple rescues onto those ladders to get those individuals out.
Carrying people down the ladder.
Carrying down, and a lot of cases trying to help them down more than
mm-hmm.
carry.
Mm-hmm.
But we actually did not lose any life that morning.
Right. Did you have any small children involved?
There were no small children. I think the youngest was probably in their early teens, but okay. definitely took all of our training and put that together
yeah.
to execute that rescue successfully.
And some of that's scary when you watch the footage, the news footage of some of it. You get some shots of the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And in South Kitsap, do you remember any incidents there that... of a different nature, maybe.
Yeah, you know, with South Kitsap, again, another very busy organization. We had a lot of car accidents on Highway 16, and we had some pretty significant motor vehicle accidents that had some very complex extrications. So for us to respond on a call and be able to remove and trap people inside those vehicles, and there's one intersection down there, it's all engineered to be safer now, that was notorious for motor vehicle accidents. And we had one motor vehicle accident where we had five people trapped in a vehicle that originally was on fire. And we were able, I think it was about a 50-minute extrication to get them out of that vehicle so we can get them to the hospital. It was pretty complex.
Wow. You know, when we were talking earlier, you used a phrase that I thought was really interesting. You said that being a firefighter in a rural community is sort of like being a Swiss Army knife. Can you explain that?
And when you're a firefighter in a rural community, you usually are very resource limited. And so you have to be, that analogy is, you have to be a Swiss Army organization. What that means is there's a lot of expectations from the community that you really should be able to do everything, from not only fire calls to medical calls, but technical rescues. In this environment here in Jefferson County, we have the marine interface. We transport out of the hospital and medical facilities, not only 911 calls, but we also support our healthcare community. So for us, when a customer calls 911, there's an expectation that we're going to be able to deliver on whatever level of service that they need to address their problem. And for us, you have to be very agile, because one minute you're on a fire, the next minute you're on a car wreck, the next minute you're going in there and going to make a transport out of a facility to another facility. So you need to be able to pull the right tools, so to speak. In this case here, I use the blade of the Army, Swiss Army knife, is okay. We're on this type of call, so we need to pull out this tool to accomplish this objective to take care of the customer.
Okay. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. The show's called Our Town. I'm your host, Mary Ann McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating people who make up the fabric of the community here. Today, my guest, Jim Wachowski, Chief of East Jefferson Fire Rescue. He's been talking about his early years in firefighting from a very young man, got involved when he was 15 and a half, and we've gone through a few of his postings, but ultimately he ended up here in Jefferson County. So how did that happen?
Back in December, the current fire chief at the time was going to retire. I was asked to consider the position. It was great. We were working over in Spokane for the fire department over there. All of our family is over here, and it was an opportunistic time to come back and be with family, but also to be able to come in here and be a part of this organization, which is very unique. And they have some great ideas where they want to go forward with, and I am blessed to be able to be part of that transition moving forward into the future.
Okay. Can you give us an idea of the scope of the department here?
We are a combination fire department, which means we have career and volunteer members, both. Some of those volunteers live at the fire stations, as I mentioned earlier, as resident firefighters. Every day we have 8 people on duty, not including one of the chief officers. And we have about 18 volunteers right now, and we're actively recruiting for more. In 2017, we responded on 4,864 calls, 73% of those being medical calls, and the remainder being fires and other types of calls. So for 8 people on duty, not including the volunteers, that's a pretty sizable run volume and activity volume for a department our size.
And geographically, it's huge too.
Yeah, we cover a lot of square miles, basically from Port Ludlow north to the end of the peninsula. That is our service area. So very diverse. We have very, very rural areas, and we have some, so to speak, suburban areas that we protect along with the city.
And in terms of equipment, what do you have? What resources do you have?
Yeah, so we have 6 fire stations, and then we lease space in a building for our administration. In those stations, we have 1 ladder truck for reaching elevations up to 100 feet. Each one of those fire stations has a fire engine. Some of those stations have a water tender in them, and those are trucks that bring water out into the rural areas without hydrants. And then each one of those fire stations also has at least 1, if not 2, medical units, since, again, 73% of our call volume are emergency medical related.
I hadn't thought about this until we started talking, but a lot of our territory out here, we don't have hydrants.
Correct. We don't have fire hydrants.
So you have to bring the water there.
Yes, we have large water trucks, and those water trucks bring out up to 3,000 gallons of water on wheels to help us suppress fires where there is no municipal water system, or in this case, fire hydrants.
That's interesting. A different problem than a lot of fire units would face.
Which limits sometimes our ability to extinguish fires just due to the amount of water we don't have available to
us. One thing that has struck me as you pull over when the fire equipment or the ambulance is coming by and everyone cranes their neck to watch, see what's going on, and there's often only one or two people on board. When I watch TV shows, they seem to have a few more. What's up with that?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we only have 8 people on duty every day to, in 2017, respond to 4,800 calls plus. So we do a lot of work. We have a lot of call activity and volume comparable to how many people we have on duty. And so in our environment, since we do live in pretty much a rural community, our resources are limited. And sometimes that's a big challenge for us just because sometimes we run out of people. And then we also have people that move into our community that are very much used to a suburban and urban setting where there's 3 or 4 firefighters that show up on a fire truck and they're always there in 5 minutes or less, but they were living basically in a city. Here, it's not like that. When you come here, you're in a rural setting with limited resources. And so we do the best that we can with the resources that we have, but often we are taxed.
Okay. Now, I found it interesting to hear that the Navy sometimes helps out.
At the Naval Magazine on Indian Island, we have a fire department that's a federal fire department, and they have 4 people that work there every day, so 4 firefighters. And they come off the base when requested, and they do that over 100 times a year. So they're a great resource for us.
That's a great resource.
Absolutely.
Okay, now you mentioned earlier that you have some volunteers, but you would like some more. Can you explain some of the things volunteers can do?
One of the things that we're really focusing on right now and moving into the future is recruitment of volunteers. And then, of course, retention once we have the volunteers established in the organization. For us, we're looking for all types of volunteers. We're looking for not only firefighter volunteers, which we have a great need for that right now, but we're also looking for volunteers to serve in an EMS-only capacity, which means you wouldn't be a firefighter, but you'd be emergency medical responder. And then we have other needs, too. We have needs for volunteers that have no interest in doing fire or EMS, but have truck driving experience that can bring those big water tenders out on fire. Or can respond and respond with a rehab unit. So when we have a fire, we have a rehab unit that comes out and fills air tanks, gives the firefighters bottles of water and stuff like that when they're taking their breaks to go back in and fight the fire. Frankly, we need office help sometimes. So for us, we're trying to position the organization where if there's someone in the community that wants to volunteer and they're willing to dedicate their time, we have something available for them to be able to contribute.
Okay. Jefferson County has seen an influx of retirees. So these people are of a certain age. You would have positions that would be fitting for them?
Absolutely. There's some programs that have nothing to do with fighting fires and providing emergency medical services that we need admin support with. Mm-hmm. It could be anywhere from helping us get information out on our website, social media, or being able to help us with some programmatic side of the department versus actually being at the task level as a combatant.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Now, we are a rural community, and I've heard repeatedly that there was an accident and one or more of the people had to be helicoptered over to Seattle for bigger medical help. And I also know there is an insurance program that can help defray that. Can you talk about that and whether you think it's a good idea for people to get that insurance?
Number one, I think it's a great idea for people to have that insurance. And the name of that program is called AirCare. That AirCare program provides that cost reduction in the event that you have to be transported to a hospital via helicopter. So a flight from Jefferson County to Harborview could be upwards of $15,000 to $18,000. With the Life Flight program, you pay minimally to none.
Yeah.
So AirCare is a good deal. So that's our plug for that.
It's a smart move to participate
in that program.
Just out of curiosity, I've seen the helicopter go from the roof of the hospital here. Do helicopters take off from anywhere else around?
Yes, the helicopters that airlift Northwest, the helicopters are very agile. They can put the helicopter down pretty much anywhere. We give them a latitude and a longitude, and they can fly right to that.
Huh, interesting.
It's a great service to have for our community.
Yeah. Yeah. So changing the subject just a little bit, I'm curious about the makeup of your force now. I know there are women firefighters. Do we have any in Jefferson County?
We do have women firefighters. So we have female firefighters in Jefferson County. And in our organization, we have career and volunteer female firefighters. I'm confident that our organization portrays our community. We have different races, we have different genders in our organization, and I think it's a really good reflection of who we are in Jefferson County, specifically the north end of the peninsula. Okay. We're very proud of that.
And in terms of like the work hours for anyone in your department, it's not really a 9-to-5 job, although you must have some clerical people that it is more a 9-to-5 job. But what would the shifts be like? What's normal?
So I think we have to break that down a little bit. For the volunteers, you volunteer your time. There's very specific state and federal requirements for training. We try to do those on weekends and at nights. So as a volunteer, you can be a home responder volunteer, where you respond from home and you go to drill a couple times a month. You can come into the fire stations and ride on the apparatus. Our career firefighters work shift work. They work 24-hour shifts, and then they have a couple of days off, then they're back on shift again. Mm-hmm. And then our administrative staff, we work a Monday through Friday, 8-to-5 shift, but there's always one of the chief officers on duty 24/7, 365. So in addition to our Monday through Friday, 8-to-5, one of us is on duty. So basically take a third of the year, you're on call after hours.
Okay. You know, we're running a bit short on time, but I do want you to mention the ballot initiative that's going to come up in February and explain what that's about.
The ballot initiative that's coming up is the annexation initiative, and that's to have officially the city of Port Townsend annex into the fire district. Everything has been operated in this agreement via an interlocal agreement, which isn't meant to be a permanent solution in most cases. We, as a fire service, we believe it's the right thing to do and allows the fire district legally to manage all the fire resources in East Jefferson Fire Rescue.
It's already all sort of happened. Absolutely. Like, we're approving it after the fact.
It is. With this interlocal agreement, usually they're not meant to be this long in duration. The only thing that changes is our ability to officially levy taxes, so to speak, in Jefferson County. And what I mean by that is right now, the city takes revenues and passes it through to the fire district to provide service to the city, because the city doesn't have a fire department anymore. The city has no fire resources. The fire station that's on Lawrence Street belongs to East Jefferson Fire Rescue. So finally, this allows us to operate like the rest of the fire district. The city and the fire department both believe this is a good thing.
Okay. And of looking forward to the future, what are some goals that you have?
One of the first ones, and I think is one of the most important ones, is our strategic planning initiative going into 2019. To keep it simple, it's not the fire department dictating what level of service you have in the community, because we have to do that within the resources that we have. It's asking the customers, the citizens, taxpayers, what level of service do they desire and how would they like us to accomplish that?
Well, we're just about out of time. One last thing. I mean, I know you work incredibly long hours, but what do you and your family tend to do for fun?
We are empty nesters. We have three children, two daughters and a son. Our son graduated from the University of Washington, is now married. Our daughters are both seniors and will be graduating this following year. Right now, it's just my wife and I and the dog. So we're learning what that's like to have time now to be able to go out and do things. We enjoy just spending weekends together, working in the yard, and we're actually starting to get out and see some other parts of the world. And our biggest excursion's been to Canada.
Well, foreign country
nonetheless.
Yes. So okay. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate your time. I also want to thank my partner, John McPherson. He's the man in the glass booth, the editor and producer of Our Town. He's the one who smooths out all our ahs and ers and you knows. He makes me and my guests sound so much more eloquent than we really are. I also want to thank Program Director Larry Stein. I also want to thank you, the listener. As you know, KPTZ is an all-volunteer operation. We value you both as a listener and perhaps even as a volunteer. Your dollar contributions are always appreciated. We're solely funded by donations, but we also want volunteers, just like the fire department wants volunteers. You're listening to KPTZ, Port Townsend 91.9 FM. The show's Our Town. We profile some of the unique individuals who make this region the special place it is. My guest today has been East Jefferson Fire Rescue Chief Jim Wachowski. I'm Marianne McNellis. Keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.